listening to Kilometer Zero by the Cycling Podcast.
Well, with what we like to call the Tour de France pretty much seemingly wrapped up, I think it's a good time for us all to look forward to what should be a humdinger of a battle at the Tour de France Femmes. So that's why the cycling podcast Femmes is kind of hijacking the Kilometer Zero today to give you a bit of a preview, a bit of a taste of the runners and riders and the stages that are going to be coming up next week when the Tour de France Femmes starts on Sunday. So my name is Rose Manley. I'm the presenter of the cycling podcast Feminine, and I'm joined by Denny Gray, a new-ish voice to the podcast of British continental fame. Well, I can't really say fame, Denny, can I? Because you're kind of a quietly pulling the strings, aren't you, at the British continental?
That's right. Yeah, but hello, Rose. I won't say welcome this time.
No, that was good. At the Giro d'Anne Arrive, Denny welcomed me to the podcast that I've been on for a few years now. But I'm delighted to be joined also by Lizzie Banks, who we've heard you on the regular pod. Lizzie, we've had to tear you away from the regular pod to get you back over here, haven't we?
I know, I defected very briefly, but now I am back. Do not worry, listeners. I will not be going back to the Tour de France Homme again. No, I had a brilliant time over there, but it's great to be back with you, Rose, and also great to have my voice back. So I'm very sorry to all the listeners who had to put up with a very croaky Lizzie for a few days, but voice is back, and I'm back where I should be on the on the cycling podcast from now.
Now, I know, but we stole you from service course, so we can't really have too many claims on you. But Lizzie, you and I did the Tour de France Femmes, although remotely, wasn't it, last year? I was on the ground for the inaugural Tour de France Femmes, well, the first women's Tour de France in its current form last year, and we were calling you up with Rook every night. But how astounding was it that having that race? I mean, at that point, we didn't know what to expect from it. Now, going into this year, we kind of know what to expect. We know that it's important to the riders and to the viewers as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely changed the game for women's cycling. And I think that we very much suspected this was going to happen. But the response to the first, let's just call it the first Tour de France Femmes, was huge. And I'm wondering whether the Netflix effect of the men's Tour de France will actually have an impact on side of the road crowds for the women's Tour de France, in addition to, you know, it being the second event as well. I really hope so, because I think that the race deserves it. And there definitely seems to be the appetite there. The name of the Tour de France, you know, brings so many people in. And I think it's going to be another furious battle this year, and I think it's going to be a lot closer than last year. So we'll be talking all about that over the next next hour or so. Might be here for a few hours. Just to warn
over
you.
The next
just
five
to warn you, listeners.
Hours. Denny, for you watching it at home last year, you know, what was it like? What was kind of your takeaway from that spectacle?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we didn't really know what to expect. Obviously, we'd had La Course, which I guess had its ups and downs over its existence, and so I guess it was with some nervous trepidation that we were watching it last year. But I think it's fair to say everyone was, you know, more than pleasantly surprised by how it turned out. Not just the exciting racing we had on the roads, but also the fans, the following. There's a report out by Zwift recently that said there was a cumulatively 23.2 million viewers for the Tour de France Femmes last year. So it's already become very popular, and hopefully this year it will just go from strength to strength.
Yeah, it's interesting there, Denny, you referencing La Course, because obviously that was a one-day race that developed from being a Champs-Élysées sprint, effectively on the same day as the men doing the Champs-Élysées sprint, and then became a one-day, almost like well, there was a brief use of a time trial once, wasn't there? But then it became a one-day hill climb, pretty much, which was won in spectacular fashion by Annemiek van Vleuten. And we are getting that element back a bit this year, aren't we? Because we are getting the Tourmalet, which is going to be stage 7. It's going to be the second to last stage. How of much more. Oh, it's going to have a huge effect, isn't it, Lizzie? On the. That unbelievably is a dog. That was terrifying.
Oh, you wouldn't get that if you took your cat to the pub, would you?
That was the strangest sound I'd ever heard. But yes, Lizzie.
Yeah, that wasn't me. That was actually a dog answering the question.
Lizzie, yes, the Tourmalet's going to have a huge influence, isn't it, on the whole shape of the race?
Yes, exactly. It's a funny tour because it's 8 stages. We have the Col d'Aspin, Col de Tourmalet double coming in the 7th stage, with the final stage being a time trial. And I think that this poses a bit of a challenge for a lot of the GC riders, because any GC riders who aren't strong in the time trial are going to want to take time before that Tourmalet stage. But everybody's going to be itchy. Nobody's going to want to let anybody get away. There are quite a number of bonus sprints on a number of the stages, which may stifle a lot of breakaways. And also within that race, you know, you've got the races for the Queen of the Mountains. And so I wonder how the GC riders are going to balance it. And I think it's going to be really, really difficult for those GC riders who aren't strong in the time trial to be able to take time before that Tourmalet stage, which will be critical for them. But the bonus of having the race set up like this is that it's not decided until the end. We just don't know what's going to happen in the time trial. I mean, I was over at the Tour de France Om just a couple of days ago watching the men's time trial, where we thought that it was going to be close and it was anything but. You simply don't know what's going to happen, especially after a very hard day like they're going to have on stage 7. There'll be a long transfer to the finish. It will depend how the riders will have recovered going into the 8th stage. So it's going to keep that excitement going right to the end. But I think we're going to see quite a battle in the first 6 stages, trying to get seconds wherever GC riders can, going for those bonus seconds, trying to potentially split the group early, maybe trying to attack. And it should set everything up for a very exciting race.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because ASO, when they put out the parcours for the race, I mean, they've labelled 4 of the 8 stages as flat. But, you know, we know from looking at the previewing the Giro, and when I got that totally wrong, because pretty much Annemiek van Vleuten made every stage of the Giro a GC stage in some respect. So a lot of it is going to be how it's raced. Denny, for you, are you seeing many other opportunities outside of those last 2 for GC?
Yeah, I think there are probably 2 stages to keep an eye on, stage 2 and stage 4.
Can I just say that Denny's picked out the 2 stages that aren't labelled as flat?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh, you're talking about flat stages. Okay.
No, I'll let you go. That's the level of genius we aspire to on the cycling podcast. The organiser doesn't label it as flat, and we label it as GC. So, I mean,
someone's got to be right.
Yeah.
No, Denny, the level of insight, tell us about that we're holding ourselves accountable to.
About stage 2 and stage 4.
Yeah, and I'll try and listen to your questions more carefully next time, Rose. But
I think I was trying to lead you astray there. I'm not sure.
Maybe. A trap. Anyway. There are traps aplenty on stage 2 and stage 4, I'd say, because stage 2 starts with 30 kilometres of climbing up to what we think is called the Col de Guéry. And as we saw during the Giro d'Anne, Annemiek van Vleuten is the type of rider that won't wait for stage 7, I suspect. She'll be wanting, I think, to take time whenever she can. So I'm not saying she's going to attack on that climb, but there are 6 categorised climbs on that stage. It finishes on a short climb. So we could see the GC beginning to take shape as early as that. And then on stage 4, that's a real classic stage. There are 5 climbs. 4 of them are backloaded in the second half of the stage. It's the longest stage of the race at 177.1 kilometres, so very, very long. And it's got a very steep uphill finish, 13% to Rodé. And that was on the same climb that was used in the 2017 Tour de France Om that Michael Matthews won, just ahead of Van Avermaet, Bosenhagen, Gilbert. So you can see already the type of riders that finish is going to favour.
And obviously on the women's side of the peloton, when you have the likes of Demi Vollering winning all of the classics and being a GC contender, that's kind of very promising for her. You know, we have less kind of there's less delineation between the classics riders and the GC riders, aren't there, on the women's peloton. So that seems pretty promising. Lizzie, we have all of these supposedly flat stages, and we have in Lorena Vivas a rider who has proven herself as someone who can get over the climbs as well. Is there any way of seeing it going any other way for those flat stages?
Yeah, it is difficult to look past her, especially seeing her, you know, in the flesh, how well she was climbing at the Giro. And this is a different race. There is a different field. The stages are much longer, which changes the dynamic of the race. But I think that there are no other sprinters that will be climbing as well as Vivas. It's kind of scary how well she's climbing. I think the difficulty may be that SD Works have a very split team. And there are some finishes that really suit Lorena Vivas, but they are finishes that where Demi Vollering could also possibly take a time bonus. So how do they balance that power there? What do they go for? Do they put all their eggs in the stage basket win? Or do they actually think, well, is there a risk that we are not going to take enough time later in the race and we want to put Demi in that position? So I think that's going to be a really difficult thing to balance for them, because they didn't come here with a pure climbing team. They came here with very much, not even half and half, actually, more weighted to the sprint side, I would say.
I mean, it is like, Lizzie, like every single race and stage we've had this year, where it seems like SD Works have got something, an option. And let's not forget, they're also bringing Lottie Capecchi. They don't just have Lorena Vivas. Mm-hmm. Anything that Lorena Vivas can't do, Lottie Capecchi is sure to mop up, isn't she?
Yeah, exactly. But that's the same dilemma with Capecchi versus Vollering in who do you go for the finish if Vollering has the chance of taking those bonus seconds as well.
And part of that SD Works lineup is Marlen Reusser. Let's hear from her.
At the moment, I'm at home waiting for my super good Tour de France taxi, which is Demi Vollering and her boyfriend. They live also in Switzerland and pick me up with their camper. They travel by camper, and then we should arrive tonight. And of course, we are looking forward. We didn't yet speak about our tactics in the team. I think we will do it when we're all together just before the race. Of course, the main goal will be to grab yellow and take home yellow with Demi and to win stages in the sprint with Lorena. Everything else, I don't know. We will see. My personal ambitions were more on the Tour de Suisse. This was the agreement. And now on helping the team and then hopefully winning the ITT, the last stage, the individual time trial, which is my personal goal. I think the team goal, as I said, is really to have yellow and win stages.
I do think that there could be competition. Normally, we would say that Voss would definitely be a big competition there, but given how she was in the Giro, and I know she took 2 second places there, so she wasn't far off the win, but with her climbing form not looking so sharp in the Giro, perhaps that's because she was more focused on the sprints. I don't think that Voss will be able to contest Vivas, but the other really big question mark is Balsamo. We know that she had a double fracture of her jaw back in the Ride London Classic back in May, and she's actually not raced since then. So this is going to be her first entry back into competition. She's got Ilaria Sanguinetti and Loretta Hansen to help with the lead outs. And we all know that Longo Borghini and Deignan and Brand can all play a role in that as well. So we just don't know. We just don't know how Balsamo is going to be, because an on-form Balsamo really could push Lorena Vivas to the line.
It does seem to me, actually, that we have a lot of teams, particularly the big teams, they're not all eggs in one basket, are they? Little Trek that you're talking about there, Lizzie, SD Works, even Movistar, they all kind
DSM.
Of have DSM. They all have multiple targets that they're balancing, or at least teams that look like they're balancing multiple targets. Denny, is that going to work positively? Because, we will come on to talking a bit more about Demi Vollering versus Annemiek van Vleuten, which is kind of like the big rivalry. But, you know, having all these teams with such a balanced roster, does that mean that we're not going to see much in terms of GC battles? We're going to see a lot more perhaps going on in the other classifications?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's no surprise that you have such a kind of diversity of strengths in different teams. This is the Tour de France fam that everyone's been gunning for. So, of course, they've picked their strongest selections. And I think, as Lizzie was saying earlier, because the first six stages are have so many opportunities, actually, in different ways for riders, that I think that hopefully opens up the race to some really exciting possibilities. You know, we're not just going to see, you know, six formulaic stages where you can easily predict the outcomes. Okay, yes, there are some stages that look like flat stages on paper, but as we saw at the Giro d'Onne, anything can happen, and this is now the biggest race in the world. You've got several jerseys up for grabs, so I think it will make for, you know, a more interesting dynamic, and also any team would want to have options, wouldn't they? Because, you know, in a Grand Tour, a crash from a GC leader or one, you know, if you put all your eggs in one basket, you haven't got any other options for the rest of the tour. So I think it makes sense.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about the GC battle, the battle for the yellow jersey, because that, I think, is probably the kind of headline of the race, isn't it? This finally getting to see Annemiek van Vleuten versus Demi Vollering. And obviously we have actually one of my classic stats that I will get in a little earlier than I did at the Giro d'Onne review, is that we've seen Vollering and Annemiek van Vleuten race against each other 18 times, and only on three occasions did Annemiek van Vleuten actually beat Vollering, which is quite an amazing stat. And I mean,
really?
Those three times we're talking were all in the Vuelta Femenina. One of them was just the team time trial, which was by one place, 2 seconds, Movistar beat SD Works. One of them was stage four, where Van Vleuten finished fifth versus 11th following, but it was a sprint, so everyone was together. And the other one was stage six, which was that famous kind of rampage stage when Van Vleuten, there was a natural break from Demi Vollering, and Van Vleuten went off on one, basically. So those are the only three times that Van Vleuten has actually finished ahead of Vollering, which makes it a really exciting prospect, doesn't it, Lizzie?
Yes, definitely. And I think the fact that they are both very good in the TT also keeps it really exciting, because we have other GC contenders, Juliette Labousse, for instance, Nivea Doma, Moorman, where their TT is much more uncertain, let's say. But Van Vleuten and Vollering are, well, they are pretty well matched in the climbs. And I think that Vollering has had the upper hand until now. And of course, Vollering wasn't at the Giro, but I do think that we saw Van Vleuten take a step up at the Giro. And I think that poises us for a really, really close battle that should come down to the wire. We simply don't know who's going to be better here. And the Aspin and the Tourmalet are much longer climbs than we've seen in any race so far this year. So that also gives a different dynamic. I think it's going to be very close. I would probably just put Vollering ahead if I were
a betting
woman,
which I'm not. We're not even asking you to speculate, Lizzie. Look,
but
there she goes.
I think it's going to be very close. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes, heading into the realm of, speculation.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I feel like the script of the Vollering versus Van Vleuten has flipped so many times. Obviously, seeing last year, Van Vleuten was just totally imperious on the two largest climbs and Planche des Belles Filles, there at the Tour de France, fam. There was just it wasn't even a close battle. And then all year, Vollering has won so many times. She's been so dominant that pre-Giro d'Onne, even after Annemiek van Vleuten won the Vuelta Femenina, it was still kind of like, but Demi Vollering beat her on a number of occasions in that race and still looked like, you know, the strongest climber. And then that narrative since the Giro d'Onne, which Vollering didn't race, that's totally changed because of the way that Annemiek van Vleuten was racing so aggressively that now it's put the question marks back on Vollering in a way that you know, seeing the results that Vollering have got this year, you would never, even like a couple of weeks ago, have thought that the favourite could be anyone but Demi Vollering for this.
Yeah, and also I think the thing you have to recognise is that whilst Vollering has obviously stepped up a level this year, her climbing seems on a different level. She beat Annemiek van Vleuten in the Dutch Time Trial Championships, despite having kind of sped over to Holland from Switzerland after cutting finishing the Tour de Suisse. She, Annemiek van Vleuten is a Grand Tour specialist, and you know she's unsurpassed when it comes to winning Grand Tours. So she's got all of that experience behind her, and it's really interesting too that they both had very different approaches to the races. You know, Annemiek van Vleuten comes in having only finished the Giro d'Orne 13 days before the first stage of the Tour de France Femmes, whereas Demi Vollering's been at altitude, taken a break from racing. So that adds another interesting twist where we just don't know how the two riders compare. It'd be fascinating to find out. And I was going to say that I thought Demi Vollering is the kind of rider that would, you know, just be looking to mop up time bonuses and stage bonuses in the early stages. But as we saw with Annemiek van Vleuten too, she's not going to hang around. So although the course is set up for this kind of GC battle on stages 7 and 8, I think we could see the GC battle starting a lot earlier.
Well, what do you think, Lizzie? I mean, is there anyone else? We talked about Vollering, we talked about van Vleuten. Is there anyone else that we should be looking at to finish with the yellow jersey in this race? Or does it really come down to those two riders?
I think that when we're looking at yellow, we're talking about van Vleuten and Vollering. But I do think that we shouldn't overlook Elisa Longaborghini. We didn't really see her full potential at the Giro d'Orne because she crashed out on the Queen stage. A nasty crash, but thankfully she was okay. She has been up at altitude training again since then, and we know she has an incredibly strong time trial. I feel that her climbing has improved this year, because in previous years I wouldn't have billed her against those two as a top climber on a long climb, but I do think that's improved. She is also one to look for time bonuses, to attack these sort of uphill finishes on stage 2 and 4, that those kind of more challenging stages that you were talking about earlier, Denny. So I think we shouldn't rule her out.
Well, let's hear from Elisa Longaborghini of Little Trek now, shall we?
Hey, Mom. So, yeah. I mean, a successful tour for Little Trek will be a stage race and maybe a stage win and maybe a good place in GC, and I think the key stages of the tour will be the Tourmalet and the time trial, and for me specifically maybe the time trial, because yeah, it's where I can even gain or lose some places. And yeah, we have surely a strong team in terms of climbing, and I think we can even have the advantage in other stages, which are more lumpy, and where we can play the game with the three of us together with the rest of the team. Surely we don't have to underestimate the team as it works, especially with Vollering and Reusser, and van Vleuten is always the main opponent.
And another person is Rianna Marcus. She's been very quietly improving everything this year. She had a really great Vuelta Femenina, and her time trial is incredibly strong at the moment. She had a dominant victory in the Dutch National Time Trial, which is almost the world championships of time trialing, yeah. Magnus Mullenreuser, isn't it, really? And so I think that even if she lost time on the Tourmalet, as long as it wasn't too much, she could pull something special out of the bag on the final stage. So I think we should keep an eye on Rianna Marcus. But I think that really when we're talking about the serious battle for yellow, we're looking at van Vleuten and Vollering.
What about, Juliette Labou also came out of the Giro d'Orne incredibly strong. She's obviously pegged as the French favourite. Can she make any inroads? I guess that is also the question, is that that third place on the podium, which is still so special, yeah. And such an elevated thing to get, you know, people are going to want to have that. I mean, we're suggesting that the whole thing's wrapped up already, but obviously there's so much racing to happen. But that third spot is also a really important one, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm sure it'll be closely fought. And as you say, I don't think we should assume that whilst Vollering and Annemiek van Vleuten go into the race as favourites, anything can happen, crashes can happen, form changes. So we shouldn't assume that they're going to run away with it. But yeah, I mean, there are lots of riders that have kind of structured their whole seasons around this race. Cassia Nieva-Doma, Ashley Moorman. We've got riders like Marta Cavalli. I'm excited to see how, I'm not suggesting she's going to be on the podium necessarily, but a rider like Claire Steels can do as well, who's climbed so well this year. So I think, and I suspect there could be very big time differences on that, on stage seven. And so I think one of the big questions for me is just, it feels like a more climber-weighted course, despite the time trial at the end, because the you know, having the Aspen and the Tourmalet back-to-back, I can see someone attacking very early on in that stage and just the race being ripped to shreds. So, you know, a good climber could really thrive.
Yeah, I agree with you, Denny. And I do think that there's a lot of other names who could be fighting for that podium battle. Labuse, as you've already mentioned. Canyon-SRAM have an interesting roster because they have Elise Chabé, who I expect her to go for the Queen of the Mountains jersey. She's always going for the Queen of the Mountains jerseys, unless she's on a specific team role. But they also have Nieva-Doma and Ricarda Bauernfeind. Now, Bauernfeind had been climbing incredibly well this season. She'd really sort of surprised herself with what she could do. But she's also got a bit of a question mark because since the Volta Femminile, she had a knee injury. She has been selected for the Tour de France, so the team obviously have faith that that knee injury is sorted and that she is back in fine fettle. But again, there's a bit of a question mark around her time trial. She was fifth in the U23 German National Championships. And then, like you say, Ashley Moorman. We don't know much about Ashley Moorman because we've not seen her racing much, but we do know she's very motivated. We also know that she's unretired for yet another year. She's signed for 2024 with AG Insurance Soudal Quickstep. And then when we look at FDJ Suez, you've got kind of a triple whammy. I'm not quite sure what they're going to do there. They've got Cecilia Uttrup-Ludwig, Marta Cavalli, as well as Evita Music. Now, if I were them, I would focus Uttrup-Ludwig purely on stage wins. Denny, you were talking about stage four, how there's a really nasty kick up to the line. Now, that is a pure Uttrup-Ludwig finish. She has often been put forward as a pure climber, and having been her teammate, I don't believe that that is where her best strengths lie. She's got an incredible kick. We saw her win a stage at last year's Tour in a similar kind of finish, very very hard kick up to the line in Epinay. And I think, again, they would be better to even have her lose some time so she could be kind of more of a rival in that kind of finish. Cavalli has a big question mark. She lost time in the Giro. We're not really sure about where her climbing form is. So I wouldn't be surprised if they put their money on Evita Music this time around, especially as a French rider. She has been climbing very well. Again, a very good performance, very impressive performance in La Vuelta Femenina. And as a French rider, she will have extra motivation, I think, to anybody else. More outsiders, we could talk about Magnaldi and Persico. Magnaldi was riding very well at the Giro d'Anne. However, I think that this being another level up and having the time trial, I think she may struggle in this race.
Lizzie, from your perspective, having those, I mean, you talk about UAE ADQ with Persico and Magnaldi, and you talk about FDJ Suez, of course, with their kind of three-pronged attack. With a course like this, is it actually beneficial to have three, to stack your roster with three riders that are kind of almost shades of each other? Or, you know, is that going to... I guess it's the Movistar question, the men's Movistar team question, isn't it? The old trident of leaders. Does that really ever work?
I don't think so. I think that from the beginning, they should be saying that this is our protected rider. If there are any opportunities for bonus seconds, we go with this rider. And with the other riders, they are there for support or for stage win options if we have them. But I think that, you know, we may see these, you know, maybe not for the race for yellow, but for the race for the podium, we may see these bonus seconds being very critical. We may not, and of course, you know, as Denny said, it may completely explode in the Aspen and Tourmalet and may have, you know, gaps of minutes between all of the riders. But I think that putting faith in one rider and having everybody else support is definitely the best strategy.
Well, we should talk about the other classifications because it's not all about the yellow jersey and, you know, where people finish on GC, because actually the green jersey battle could be a really interesting one, particularly on this parkour.
Yeah, and we haven't really talked about Charlotte Kuhl yet, of course. She was on absolute fire at the Belvoise Tour in Belgium recently. I think she won 3 or 4 stages in a row, but then she pulled out because of illness, and we're not quite clear on where she's at. But of course, you know, as we've seen this season, she is the most likely rider to be able to match Lorena Vivas on the sprint stages. And you can imagine with a team like DSM Firmenich that they are going to be gunning for that jersey. So I would expect to see her up there. I think the other thing I was going to say, Rose, is that, of course, stage one is the opportunity for all the jerseys to be up for grabs for the first time. And whilst the green jersey is up there too, you've got the KOM jersey with just one KOM climb, which is right at the end of the race, and the yellow jersey up for grabs. And it would be, yeah, it's going to be a really fascinatingly poised stage, because every team in the race is going to want to claim a jersey on the first stage.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting you mentioned Charlotte Kuhl being like the only rival, but she's actually really the only sprinter that's actually beaten Lorena Vivas at all, like out and out, all year. And we actually haven't seen them more recently race against each other, have we? But Lizzie, give us a bit of insight on Charlotte, and, you know, whether we've seen Lorena climb so well and get over these little bumps turn things into sprints when they weren't sprints. How does Charlotte Tocoul compare in that regard?
She's not as good. I mean, like, that's the matter. That's the fact of the matter at the moment. You know, Vivas is climbing better than any sprinter we've ever seen. You know, she said herself she feels that SD Works have helped her to become a more complete rider this year, and she's really happy with how she's progressed on all fronts. And that's very visible from the outside as well. Kuhl does climb pretty well. But simply not as well as Vivas. I think, you know, when we're looking at sprinters who can get over the climbs, we've already mentioned Balsamo. We could also throw Norsgaard into the mix there. Norsgaard's been climbing very, very well this year. I don't think she can match Vivas in a sprint finish, but there may actually be a climb that Norsgaard could get over that Vivas couldn't. So, yeah, we'll have to see how it plays out there. I think there's also a big question mark around Grace Brown. And, OK, we wouldn't put Grace Brown down as a pure sprinter, but when we're looking at hilly stages where there may be a slightly reduced bunch, Grace Brown is definitely a name that we have to put into the mix. She didn't have the best spring. She struggled a little bit with her form. She was really on fire in Australia, struggled a little bit throughout the spring. She actually returned home to Australia recently for a period to sort of mentally reset in the Australian winter, actually, before coming back to her home in Italy before the Tour de France Femme. So if she is back in the form that we expect her in, she could be one of those riders that can challenge on these slightly reduced hilly stages that do end in a group sprint.
Sorry, I realised I didn't really answer your question properly on the green jersey competition, but also, of course, normally we would be pinpointing Marianne Vos as you know, a nailed-on favourite to win a jersey like that. But of course, since at the Giro d'Ornée, she just didn't seem to be in the form we'd expect her to be. Lizzie was saying, you know, she just wasn't where she would normally be. So it will be interesting to see where she's at. You know, stage one would be a stage you'd think she would be suited to normally. And she's the kind of rider that could mop up enough points to win that competition. But it's where her form's at.
Yeah, and you know, you're right, Denny. I mean, I completely circumvented Rose's question about the green jersey and just went off on one about something completely different about Grace Brown's form from the spring.
It's all right. It's not like I'm here to, you know, guide the conversation. That's all right. Cool.
You know, if we could look past Kuhl, Pfeiffer Georgie could potentially be a rider for the green jersey competition. We know she can climb. We know she can sprint. Now, if you want to go for the green jersey competition in a race like this, you need to be thinking about it from the beginning. So with the fact that Charlotte Kuhl had some sickness, we don't know what it was, we don't know how it's going to affect her, potentially they'll be thinking actually further ahead and about about Pfeiffer Georgiou, because I think she could be a really good bet for that competition as well.
But
she
surely,
can get over a lot of climbs, and she is fast.
Surely, Lizzie, that's adding yet another... I mean, DSM already have, you know, Charlotte Kühl for the sprints, as you say. Pfeiffer Georgiou, if she was going to go for green, that's another thing. And then Juliette Labou trying to get as high up on GC. Surely there's a point where there's too many targets.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I think we just don't know what's going to happen. So, for instance, on stage one, we've got the Côte de Durtol, just 9 kilometres before the finish. I am completely mangled that, so apologies. But as you said, Denny, all of the jerseys are up for grabs. And that means that everybody's going to be going hell for leather to get those points for the mountains jersey. So there's every chance that as it goes totally full gas up there, 1.7 kilometres at 7.2%, that the sprinters may get dropped. Now, Georgie's going to have instruction from the team that if Charlotte Kühl is dropped, you know, Georgie's not going to be told to wait. Georgie is going to be told to stay with the front, and if she's dropped, that it's her opportunity. If Charlotte Kühl is there, she will be leading her out. And so I think that we may see some of the classic sprinters dropped on that first stage. Yes, it's very difficult to balance expectations, but it has to be, this is our plan, and if this doesn't happen, then we do this. And I think that Georgie may be a plan B, and after stage one, everything may get reassessed.
Well, let's hear from Team DSM's Pfeiffer Georgiou.
I think a successful tour for us would be stage wins with Charlotte and doing everything to, yeah, give Juliette the opportunity to have the best result on GC. I think that a podium is possible for her, and I think she had a really strong Giro and showed that she's up there with some of the best climbers in the world. And yeah, I think a hard race suits her, and I think the team showed in the Giro that they were all really strong and could support her and, yeah, make the race in a way that would help Juliette succeed. And so I think she comes from that with a lot of confidence. I think the team does as well. And yeah, I think there's, yeah, a lot of motivation heading into this race. Yeah, I think we've got a really strong team to support both Charlotte and Juliette. We've got our lead out that we've, yeah, worked really hard on from training camp throughout all the races this year. I think that's really dialed, and Charlotte's in, yeah, really great shape. And I think that's really exciting to, yeah, go for stage wins with her. We've also got, yeah, great climbing support in the likes of Esme and Elisa and Leia. And yeah, I think on the days where we've got sprints, it's just about keeping Juliet safe, yeah, and relaxed and in control. And I think we kind of split the team to make sure that both Charlotte and Juliet are looked after every day, whether we're going for GC that day or whether it's a, yeah, a sprint day and we're going for a stage win. And I think, yeah, the team is really well balanced to do both of those goals at the same time.
Well, I liked, Lizzie, how you said we just don't know what's going to happen, which we could have saved everyone a good 45 minutes and just just opened our Tour de France fam preview by just saying we don't know what's going to happen. You're going to have to just watch it, which is a fair enough assessment, I would say.
Watch it and listen to us, Rose.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. And you say listen to us. Of course, we're going to have daily coverage from the Tour de France fam. Me and Denny are going to be road trip buddies. Denny looks terrified.
Well, I don't know. I was the one of being accused of being a psychopath before I joined the team. So I don't know who should be most terrified. But yeah, no, I can't wait to get on the road. And of course, we're starting in Clermont-Ferrand, which is where the men's stage 11 was not that long ago. And then I note that we're travelling through from Pan au Chocolat country down to Chocolatine country. So I'm very very keen to see how the terminology for a Pan au Chocolat changes as we go south.
That's the key question. That's the thing that we're all waiting for. But we are going to have Francois Thomazeau is going to send in his Francois French flavour. So we're going to have a sense of what we should be eating and drinking and the cultural sites we should be looking out for. Or we could just do like Lizzie did and just have sushi instead when you went out to the Tour de France for the podcast,
Rose,
Lizzie.
You know, Lionel was desperate for something non-French for a few days. He had He'd had a bit too much confit de canard, a little bit too much cheese. And when I suggested, well, what about taking out sushi and sitting on a park bench? Actually, it was the park bench that really perturbed him. He said that he just didn't like the idea of sitting in a line. So we managed to, we found a brasserie that was closed. We used their tables and cleaned up after ourselves and left no trace. And then Lionel was very happy with the situation.
Well, Lizzie, we're hoping that you're going to join us. And, you know, we're very flexible, aren't we, Denny? We can eat in the line, we can eat round a table, we can eat on a bench. We won't be so particular about that. So we're hoping, Lizzie, that you'll be able to join us for some of it out on the road as well. That'd be fantastic. Well, I'm going to wrap it up there and say, well, goodbye and see you out in France. So see you there, Denny.
Mm, au revoir.
Oh, very nice. And Lizzie, we hope to see you there as well. If not, we'll be patching you up on Zoom anyway.
Thanks, Rose. Looking forward to it and looking forward to catching up throughout the race.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.